discharge instructions. If I leave you with anything today, if you have to circle one thing and say, I'm going back to my department and check on this, it is the discharge instructions. One half the cases, lawsuits, and emergency medicine are based on the quality of the discharge instructions. I did not say length of the discharge instructions. Bigger is not better. Okay? Can't tell you how happy it makes me to say that. But the truth is, discharge instructions need to be short, to the point, and written in a language that the patient can understand. BID, TID, you know, sprained ankles, RICE. I had that written on the bottom of a discharge instruction one time, RICE. And of course, the resident thought, everybody understood rest, ice, compression, elevation. The patient's walking out and says to me, what kind of rice should I eat? I'll tell you one we got a complaint on is when it said on the discharge instructions, F-U in A-M. Is this physical therapy? I don't know. Why are we concerned about this? Here's how you judge it. Can the average fourth grader read it and know what to do? Here's the instruction that always loses in court. See your doctor, if not better. Well, I'm not better now. When am I supposed to do that? Do you understand that instruction? See, juries hate poetry. They love prose. If they cannot look at it and understand what you meant, then they decide in favor of the other guy. If it says, you're going to see Dr. Smith at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning and I call Dr. Smith, and he knows you're coming. See, there's not much you can screw up on that deal, is there? Dr. Smith's their doctor. They know what 10 o'clock means. I mean, it's hard to blow that one. But if you cannot look at those discharge instructions and be able to follow them with no more intelligence or knowledge base than a fourth grader, they're wrong. Short, to the point, all in English, and something that they cannot screw up. They need to be, and here's the rule. Ask yourself this question. If you're doing any risk management work at your hospital, pull the last 100 charts. Because realize the patient only leaves with two things. The discharge instructions and occasionally a prescription. That's all they know about the visit. They don't know what the intelligence was which went into the decision to not do something or to do something. All they know is, this is the scrap of paper I was given. What about these long pre-printed discharge instructions? Crap. The more that's written, the less that's read. Get that through your head. When you were a kid, did you want to read Moby Dick or Old Man in the Sea? I always remember when my son was, he's 27 now, he's about 15, came home with this little yellow and black pamphlet, the Cliff Notes for Moby Dick. And I said to him, that's not Moby Dick. He says, it's close enough. How many people in this room have ever bought Cliff Notes? Yeah, understand that just think of Cliff Notes the next time you want to give them a two-page information sheet on amoxicillin. See, nobody knows what to do with that crap, and nobody reads it. I promise you that. The most common piece of trash outside our emergency department were these long-written discharge instructions and information sheets. The other thing is you need to keep information and instructions totally separate. See, there's two or three things you want them to do. That's different from educating them on trigeminal neuralgia. Okay, they have these wonderful discharge pre-printed things, which, by the way, you can't even read and understand, let alone them. Don't go there. Short, to the point, time-specific, action-specific, re-entry into the system in a specific time. I'll give you the case. Detroit Hospital, a few years back, a four-year-old went in with nausea and vomiting. What's the diagnosis? Gastroenteritis. Okay, I'm going to invent a pen someday. Gastroenteritis in the bottom of more charts of emergency medicine malpractice than any other. And I'm going to invent a pen. Remember Dr. Strangelove? He had one hand that was still a Nazi. Well, this pen, as soon as you write gastroenteritis, it's going to slap you in the forehead and go, stupid, think again. Rethink the issue. Anyway, the kid had been sent home, and it said, see your doctor if not better. Well, the parents kept the kid at home, feed him some water, got a little better, then vomited. Comes back 3 days later, now he's got a rigid abdomen. He's got a perforated appendix. And they go to induce anesthesia for surgery. The kid dies on the table. Now, at the time of trial, the attorney who had the case handled it beautifully. In his closing, and by the way, lawsuits are the most sexist, racist, unforgiving events you can ever imagine in your life. Now I've got an Indian doctor in the city of Detroit with a mostly black jury, and they brought out on a cross-examination that the guy did drive a Mercedes, which, as you remember, is a car built in Germany, as opposed to in the city of Detroit, where all these people are laid off. So now here's the closing argument. He had a very funny voice. He had a voice very similar to our rabbit. Well, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, see your doctor, if not better. Did he mean in an hour? Did he mean in a day? Did he mean in a month? My people are good people, but they're simple people. Why couldn't he take the time to explain? Was he too busy reading his Mercedes catalog? $1.7 million later, that hospital's rethinking how it's going to write discharge instructions. Take this home with you. One half the lawsuits in emergency medicine can be traced back to not closing the ring in the discharge instruction program. I can look at your hospital. We do that. We have a company that looks at that. First thing I pull is the last 200 charts and look at how you instructed patients. And I'll tell you what your suit probability is. Now, I know you don't want to hear that because it's so simple. It's so straightforward. You tend to lose on obvious things. Just a few general problems, and then we'll call this session to a close. Loose lips sink ships. What do I mean by that? You believe something to the core of your soul. That is, if you take away their clothes and lay them down, they can't hear. They can hear just fine. I always remember as a kid going to see my mother. She was at a famous Detroit hospital named after a famous automaker, okay? The Chrysler General. And she had been there, and they pushed her at 8 o'clock in the morning down to radiology. Well, she got into the wrong hallway. And they never found her all day. And so I said to my mother, the good Swedish immigrant woman, I said to her at the end of the day, I said, Mother, that must have been a terrible day. She said, oh, no. Did you enjoy it? Yeah, sure, you betcha. Why? She said, well, she could tell you the name of every doctor sleeping with every nurse. She even knew the name of the patient they dropped off the table that day. Why? Because when they got nothing better to do, they listened to everything you say. We're involved in a case right now where at checking out at the desk, the checkout station was right near the clerk. So somebody called in. The clerk put her hand over the phone and said to the doc standing there, it's Dr. Smith, I think he's drunk again. The person checking out, the nephew of Dr. Smith. Do you think that didn't throw shit everywhere? Be very careful with what you say. Loose lips sink ships. Do not get into that. Undermining confidence in the healthcare team. Whenever you get a chance, compliment everybody and thank everybody. Well, thank you very much for the good care you gave Mrs. Smith. That's an excellent looking splint. If you don't like the splint, say, there's two ways of saying that. You could say, God, nobody's doing that anymore. Let me just do it right. Ooh, never do that. Say, I'm sorry. I may not have given you the exact position that I wanted. Let's do a minor adjustment. Oh, but it's on nice and tight. Like so tight the fingers are blue, but that's okay. Measure your words carefully because I think that people pick up on these little interaction problems. I was sewing up a guy one time in the department, and two nurses are talking behind me. See if this couldn't happen in your own department. One says to the other, did they short you on your overtime this month? The other nurse says, well, of course, this hospital never does anything right. Now, there's the guy I'm working on who goes, you know, just understand people slop these things over, and it doesn't work well. Keep that in mind. Medical system, we already talked about Entrium, always have on this chart not only a specific time, but a specific number that they should call or a place they should go that you have control of. If they don't have a doctor on your staff, then give them one, because you have no control over a doctor on another staff, do you? None, zero. If you don't provide them an access, an entry into the system,
then it's your fault. And people believe that. They believe that you have an obligation. And by the way, that's what EmTALA talks about. You have an obligation to close the ring, bring them into the system. Ladies and gentlemen, I have strutted and fretted, as Shakespeare said, this hour upon the stage. I hope that I have conveyed to you one message during this period of time. The only person who's been assigned to take care of you is who? You. I don't care about access block and overcrowding, all these other things. Are they bad? Yes. The point is, most humans will forgive you anything if they think you tried on their behalf. I believe that if we act to the patients as we would to our mother or our brother or anyone else we actually cared about, we have very little to fear from the slings and arrows of an outrageous legal system. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning.